Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number three. So here we are on this hour number three on a Turbo Thursday, getting you all the way to Friday as fast as we can. Going to go to number three on the Triple Dipper. I'm calling it Run the Numbers. And so that's what we're going to do. We're going to run the numbers here for a minute. You know, some folks look at polling and they say, does it really work? Is it scientific enough? Does it have a basis in reality? And the answer is that is yes. Now, you can have bad polls, and there are bad pollsters. And you can have polls that are meaningless because they're designed to be what we call push polls, which is designed to push people towards the answer they want. But then there's the actual science of polling that is truly statistically based and can actually give you a good measuring stick to work with. Somebody who knows that better than most is my friend John Rogers, who is a pollster with Signal Analytics. Signal spelled C-Y-G-N-A-L. Signal Analytics started in Alabama and went national. They are now one of the most respected polling organizations in the nation, polling for races everywhere. And John Rogers is on the phone right now. John Rogers, how you doing, man?
Phil, I am doing great. What are we at? 5 weeks until the election or so. I mean, what an incredible year it's been, and coming down to the home stretch.
Yeah, and it's a crazy one. I mean, how do you poll this when they're pulling candidates out of the race at the 11th hour? But we're literally in sort of unprecedented territory with a race that involves candidates, one of whom has only been in for 100 days. So, what are you seeing right now, man? Because I'm seeing the talk back and forth that it's still a very close race, but there's some battlegrounds that look like they got some movement in them. And so tell me what you see.
You know, one thing that's really interesting, Phil, is that we did a national survey here recently that we've included, and the top priority that voters have right now is inflation and the economy. And that is with voters overall that they say that that is their top priority. That's also true for swing voters who are going to decide the election. They say inflation and the economy, 44% of them say that's their top priority. And then when we asked voters, who do you blame more for the inflation that the economy has seen, most voters blame the Democratic Party. And that is the central issue that Kamala Harris faces, is that voters blame her party and her administration's policies for inflation. And so I think what really is going to kind of the election is going to hinge on, as we come down to the last 5 weeks, these voters in these battleground states of North Carolina and Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, they're going to have to make a decision. Was my life better under President Trump, or was it better under the Biden-Harris administration? And I think if you're the Trump Vance team, you got to feel pretty good about where that may land.
Well, So if you're the Trump Vance team, you're feeling pretty good. I like hearing that. First of all, are the battleground states still as much of a battleground as they were before? Or are we seeing trends in certain directions? Because you just kind of intoned that maybe we are seeing a trend in a good direction.
Yeah, I think so. There are 7 battleground states that everybody has talked about for the last 4 or 5 months, right? You have the 3 Rust Belt states of Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania.
Right.
You have the 2 Sun Belt states out west of Nevada and Arizona, and then you have Georgia and North Carolina. And things have shifted a little bit in the last 2 to 3 weeks. I would say that Nevada and Arizona are trending pretty well for President Trump. I think Georgia, maybe you're starting to see a little bit more separation in Trump's favor in Georgia. Harris had closed the gap a little bit a couple of weeks ago, but it seems like it's kind of reverting back to a slight edge for Trump. And then you've had a little bit of, some stirring in the water in North Carolina, where there's been a lot of controversy involving Mark Robinson, who's a Republican nominee for governor there. And so what the Kamala Harris team is hoping is that there's going to be sort of negative coattails, and that all the stuff that is involved with Mark Robinson, that'll negatively impact Trump. I don't really think it's not going to help Trump, everything that's going on with Mark Robinson.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's really going to hurt him that much. I mean, you're talking about somebody who's running for governor that a lot of people had no idea who he was a year ago versus somebody in Trump who has been a national figure for a quarter of a century now.
Well, so, you mentioned that about Mark Robinson, and I hate to see the things that are being said, and you know, I don't know what truth is in that regard. You never can tell. It looks like an October surprise. But that being said, where do you see the biggest chinks in what is often referred to as the blue wall? Because some of these battleground states, they're battlegrounds this year, but they've been held by Democrats for, you know, decades. So, I saw one article the other day that said that even Minnesota, which is Tim Walz's state, is in play, and it's not been in play in God knows when. So where's the blue wall having the most amount of crumbling, D.C.?
Yeah, I don't think personally that Minnesota is really in play. And if Biden had stayed in the race, I do think a state like Minnesota, certainly a state like Virginia, would have been much, much closer and could have been even a battle, you know, toss up. But I think that Minnesota is probably pretty firmly in the Democratic column. And then it really comes down to Pennsylvania. I think that Wisconsin, you probably have to give right now a slight edge to Harris. And then Michigan is probably a little bit of a closer run thing. The Pennsylvania is where, and this is why Harris is spending so much time there. It seems like every time you turn on TV, she's trying to act like this. She knows the concerns of the rural working class voter in Pennsylvania. But it's because she is underperforming there a little bit relative to where Joe Biden was. This is a state that outside of Philadelphia and outside of certain parts of Pittsburgh, she just doesn't really have a lot of natural appeal to some of those voters. So that's the state that if you're the Democrats, you're the most worried about. And that's the state, I think, of those three Rust Belt states that we might traditionally think of as leaning blue, that if you're the Trump team, you probably feel the best about.
Okay. All right. I like it. So there's some geographic. What about demographic? I mean, what are we seeing about, white middle-class soccer moms? What are we seeing about the black vote, the Latino vote? We're hearing a lot of stories that Trump is gaining ground. And I've even heard, by the way, there's a resurgence in the idea of the Reagan Democrat being the Trump Democrat, people that are actually coming over from the other party. What do you see trend-wise in a demographic pattern?
Yeah, what's interesting is that Harris is not like, so Biden was obviously doing worse than a lot of people expected with men, with African-American men and Hispanic men. And that was a huge issue for the Biden campaign. And so a lot of Democratic strategists thought, wow, we'll get Harris on top of the ticket and all that's going to kind of go away. And it really hasn't. It's states where there's a pretty large minority population, like, for instance, in Nevada or Arizona or in Georgia. Those are states where Harris has not been able to capture a lead of any kind of significance or durability in those states. And so I think that that's something that has shifted a little bit where, especially, and that's partly why you see Trump going to things like UFC fights. He's on these different podcasts that, if you're a Hispanic male, 40 years old or whatever, or African-American man around that same age, you might be listening to this podcast or watching the sporting event. That's very calculated on the part of his campaign. And, I think part of it is because the Democratic Party has become the party of sort of coastal elite cities, right?
Yeah.
They're the party of San Francisco. They're the party of Philadelphia. And what's that's created opportunities for Republicans and conservatives and Trump to appeal to those working class voters of color.
Well, I can't wait to see how it plays out, to be honest with you. I know that we talk about it. We're sort of prognosticating. Really, your profession is a prognostication with a review of the facts to help you prognosticate. But the reality is, boots on the ground. Here's my question for you then. In real boots on the ground, do you think it's possible? Because I saw one article today that said that there's a reason to believe that Trump is being underpolled, much like he was in 2016. He was underpolled, and then all of a sudden he won. Do you see a silent majority out there? Just what does your gut tell you, Mr. Pollster?
I don't think that's the case for a couple of different reasons. One, I think that the 2016 so-called polling mess, that was really more of a media narrative that was, you had some public pollsters who are associated with colleges and universities who they did have some pretty significant polling misses. But I can tell you, as somebody who works in the private industry, you know, if we have big polling misses year after year, like, we're going to go out of business, right? And that's why we've been able to stay in business, because we've been so accurate for so long. We have such a good track record. And so it's a little bit of a misnomer that the media drove a little bit around 2016. But I think that for the most part, that, you know, the issues of trying to poll shy voters, that kind of thing, listen, people are very engaged in this election. The stakes are really high. Most voters sense that, and, you know, they want to express their opinions. So I don't think that that is necessarily an issue this cycle.
Okay. All right. Well, all right. Listen, my brother, last question I got you here. For the benefit of the audience, in the background of every election, there are different types of folks who are really making the election team work. There's obviously going to be the volunteers, the door knockers, the people who are willing to make the phone calls. But then there's two other folks that are what I would call the paid class, and one of which is going to be the consultants, the ones who are advising on what to do next and how to message and all that kind of stuff. And the others are the pollsters like you, who will poll the race and give the information that then the consultants often use to help guide themselves in the next round of the election. Right now, I'm hearing that consultants are upset because pollsters are indicating that Kamala may have peaked. Like, she didn't get much of a bump out of the debate. She didn't get much of a bump out of the DNC conference, and she didn't get much of a bump at all out of Oprah Winfrey's pep rally. So my question is, has she peaked, or is she have a chance still to pull away? And what do you think on that?
She got a little bit of a bump, you know, from the Democratic National Convention, which, I mean, look, you know, half the mainstream media, if not more, just seems like the paid media arm of the DNC at this point, right?
Yeah.
You see CNN, you watch it, and you're like, I mean, they're just falling all over themselves to apologize for her, except for Scott Jennings, who's like a lone voice of sanity on CNN, it seems. But, you know, I think, I don't know if I would say she peaked, but she got a little bit of a bump from the convention. But, you know, now the question is, like, we're 5 weeks away. There's going to be a vice presidential debate that's coming up soon. And presumably Kamala is actually going to have to talk to, you know, actually give an interview and actually do a press conference at some point, and, you know, see if she can, you know, speak for 2 minutes and get beyond the normal word salad that she offers up. So yeah, I think that it's a tight election, right? It's a polarized country. You know, I think Trump has the edge right now, but it is a tight election, and I would be surprised if either candidate just completely runs away with it in the next 5 weeks.
All right, well, I mean, close is more fun for pollsters, I guess, but it makes for nail-biting for all the rest of us. But listen, man, we appreciate you. John Rogers from Signal Analytics, you do good work, and we'll have you back on again sometime soon, all right?
Phil, great to be with you.
You too, man. Take care. Wow. All right, take me to a break, Big Rig. I ran long on purpose just trying to get as much as we could out of that conversation. But, yeah, it's just interesting to me. It's fascinating. But I have to also look at it and go, man, the consultants right now are wishing the pollsters would give them more. And right now the pollsters are saying it's just close. And she's not getting the bump. And the question is, has she peaked? I don't know. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.